You guys, time once again for Flickers of Fear. Now, when I first started doing this series not too long ago, one of the main motivations behind it was wanting to do more giallo movies because there are so many of them that I wanted to talk about, you know, among other genres as well, but I really, really like giallo movies, and I felt like I didn't really have a lot of scope to talk about them on the movie retrospective because we only did once a week. So one of the things that I wanted to do going into this project was to do more giallo movies and just get more of them done in the genre. Now, that said, I started out with kind of a strange one. Maybe not one of the ones, because we have done some giallo movies on our regular retrospective show. We did Deep Red, obviously. We've done Suspiria. But the thing about it is that I thought I would start with one that was a little bit more obscure, and I guess you could say more of a lesser addition to the genre, for sure like a much later one. So today we're going to be talking about Lamberto Bava's 1983 A Blade in the Dark. Now, the Italian title of this movie actually translates to something like The House with the Dark Staircase, which, whatever, that works too. But this movie, so I guess what the history of this one was that Lamberto Bava was given this film. Now, it was originally supposed to be for Italian TV, and I think it was supposed to be like a 4-episode miniseries. Like, it was going to be 4 30-minute episodes. So he kind of had written it, like, structured it that at the end of every 30-minute episode, there'd be, like, a really extreme kill or whatever, and then it'd be, like, a cliffhanger, and then, like, you'd see the next one. Well, he did that, but then when he showed it to the producers or the backers or whoever was going to show it on TV, it was deemed too gory for television. Lucio Fulci ran into similar problems with House of Clocks, I believe was one of them. He might have had more in that line. But, you know, that happened in this case as well. So basically the producers said, well, why don't you just recut it into a single feature film and we'll just show it theatrically or whatever. So that's what Lamberto Bava ended up doing. Now, I will say that this movie, as I said, it's kind of, if you're new to giallo movies, I would not recommend seeing this one because this is really not, you know, it's a solid film, but it's not one of the better examples of the genre. It's not one of the real iconic ones. And like I said, it's, you know, it's kind of later because it didn't come out until 1983. And I feel like giallo movies, kind of their heyday had been, you know, early to mid 70s. So by the time the 80s rolled around, you know, it was getting to the point where they were getting kind of old and tired. A Blade in the Dark actually has a really lot of references to other giallo films, particularly Tenebrae. And, you know, it has some aspects of maybe Psycho in there. People have also said that it was kind of similar to Blowout, the Brian De Palma film. So it has aspects of all these other movies, and it's kind of just, so it's a little bit of a retread, but it does have a lot of the, you know, giallo tropes. So what you have here is there's a dude named Bruno, and he is a musician. He's played by the dude Andrea Acchipini, I think is how you pronounce his name. He was in New York Ripper, the Lucio Fulci movie. So he's a musician, and he is working on scoring a horror film. Now, the horror film is being made by this woman, Sandra, and she is basically shows him, like, the same scene over and over again. So he's kind of, like, trying to score the movie from that. Now, interestingly, this little movie within a movie, which you only see like a few seconds of really, stars the kid who played Bob in Lucio Fulci's House by the Cemetery. So, as I said, it's kind of like 6 degrees of giallo movies because it's just kind of like directors and actors, they just keep turning up and all of this, you know, I guess because the film industry, you know, in Italy was kind of, you know, not as big as Hollywood, I suppose. So you'd see like the same people turning up, particularly in this one genre. So she's been showing him this movie that's supposedly going to be really scary. And the first scene is this dark staircase, like, leading down to a cellar. There's these three boys, one of which is Bob from House by the Cemetery. And the two boys are kind of, like, making fun of Bob. I'm just going to call him that because he's scared of the dark. And so they have a tennis ball and they kind of throw it down the stairs and want to make him go get it. And then they start taunting him about how, about him being a female. So that's kind of like, which may seem really random. It's like all these little boys going, "You are a female, you are a female." But it does actually kind of tie in to the central mystery of the thing. So it's not completely at random. So while Bruno is scoring this film, I suppose that, you know, the director or whoever is producing this horror movie that he's doing the music for, the director, she decides that, well, she wants to get him in the mood, so and wants to creep him out. So she rents this massive villa, which actually belonged to one of the producers of the movie, I guess. Like in real life, that's where they got this house for him to shoot in. And so she wants him to stay there because she's like, oh, it's kind of creepy and kind of isolated, so it'll kind of put you in the mood for doing the scary music. So he moves in there. And he's only there for maybe a day or two, and he's kind of like noodling around, like working on the score or what have you. And then all of a sudden, this strange woman pops out of one of his closets, quite literally. Which is one of the hilarious things about this movie is that, as isolated as this villa is, supposedly, kind of out in the middle of this big, like, landscaped garden, which also they have a creepy groundskeeper, you know, because like you do, but just random women keep turning up, so just unusually. The crazy thing about this, so this woman turns up, literally pops out of his closet because he hears something. There's like this weird whispering, like coming out on his recordings while he's doing the musical score. And, you know, it sounds like a woman's voice. And so he's like kind of investigating this noise, and this woman literally pops out of his closet. Now, another funny thing about this too, she pops out of the closet and she's like she was scared by a cockroach, even though they show it and it's clearly a spider. And throughout the rest of the movie, every time they refer to that event, everybody says cockroach, even though it was obviously a spider. I don't know if it was just some kind of weird thing with the dubbing, because I have to say, the dubbing in this, now if you watch giallo movies, you know, that genre, overall, English dubbing is usually pretty bad. This one kind of takes it to a whole new level, but this one takes it to a level where it's almost like just fucking super hilarious again, just because it's so terrible and like the random weird shit that they say. I don't know if it was like some lost in translation deal or I don't know. I'll get into it a little bit later, but just like some of the random shit they say that like makes absolutely no sense, and it's just super, super funny. And it's like I cracked up a couple times watching this. But so this woman that pops out of the closet notably does not ever tell him what the fuck she was doing in the closet. Basically, the only explanation she gives is that, oh, I used to have this friend, Linda, and she lived here. Like, she was the former tenant of the house. And, you know, I used to pop by and see her or whatever. But the thing about it is that, I don't know. Like I said, maybe I'm overthinking it and it's like, you know, shit like this isn't supposed to make sense. But even though she said that her friend used to live there and she used to come over, she doesn't know where the bathroom is because then he has to tell her, like Bruno has to tell her where the bathroom is. He is strangely not alarmed that there's this weird woman like just popping out of his closet and not explaining why she's in the closet, and she's being like really cagey about it, but it's like whatever. Okay. So the thing about it is that just like a lot of giallo movies, they're trying to set up a whole bunch of red herrings so that you don't know who the killer is. So, you know, you're led to believe, you know, maybe this woman could be the killer. What's she doing hiding in random ass people's closets? You know what I mean? So it's kind of like that. However, if she was meant to be a red herring, it doesn't last very long because she gets murdered like pretty much immediately, like in the first 10 minutes of the movie. Now, the first couple kills in this, I will say, are kind of, they're not super gory and they're a little bit lame just because the weapon is like a little utility knife. You know what I'm saying? Like literally one of these things. That is the murder weapon. And so much is made of the little click, click, click. No, mine doesn't do that because it's broken, but the little click noise it makes, like as the blade comes out. So this is kind of supposed to be scary, I suppose. But so yeah, so the first couple people get killed with that. And there's also a really funny scene, and I think I've mentioned this before on maybe some of my other giallo reviews, is that there was a big thing in a lot of giallo movies, and I guess old horror movies in general, not just Italian ones, but where a killer would be chasing a woman. And the woman would just kind of stand there and just kind of let herself get killed. She would just kind of stand there and scream and be like, oh no, even though she could clearly like run or kick the dude in the balls or whatever. And they just never did that. So there's a little bit of that going on, at least like, you know, the closet girl, Katia, at least she does kind of run, but she still gets murdered. She hides behind a thing of chicken wire, which if you're playing along at home, you can see through. So it's not like a real good hiding space. And but also she could have like kept running, but she didn't. And then she just gets like stabbed with this little utility knife like through the chicken wire. So, you know, it's not a real noble end, I'm gonna say, for Katya, the closet girl. So after she gets killed, Bruno still doesn't know what the hell is going on. I will say that the first pretty much half of this movie is pretty slow in the sense that it's mostly just Bruno skulking around his house, wondering what, like, where these weird whispering noises are coming from, wondering what happened to Katya because she disappeared. There's also a scene like after she gets murdered and the killer is like dragging her, you know, out through the yard and it's nighttime and he kind of hears something. So he goes out there with a flashlight and he's out there in the bushes and her body is literally like right there, like at his feet because they have a shot of showing like her bloody face and then like his shoes. And he's just very deliberately going, huh, I wonder where Katya went to. She's right there and he doesn't see it. So yeah, then the phone rings and he turns around and goes back to the house. So it's, you know, it's fun. It's like a little bit contrived, I'm gonna say, but it's funny in how contrived it is. Because like I said, I guess giallo movies in general have these kind of contrived setups. So it's, if you're, you know, used to the genre, it's not gonna bother you too much. But some of the stuff is just a little bit too like unbelievable, you know what I mean? It's just like how could he have not seen her body? She was like literally right there, like at his feet. And it wasn't that dark outside. But anyway, then it's like, so they try to set up, you know, so Bruno's skulking around the house for half of the movie. There's whispers on his tape. Random women keep showing up at his house. This other friend of Linda's, who's, you know, the former tenant, this other woman shows up and to swim in the pool. And then she gets horribly, horribly murdered. And probably the best gore sequence. It's not gory by today's standards, but I can see how it would have been too, way too gory for TV, you know, especially like it's like a knife through the hand and then it comes out and it's like it's pretty nasty. So she gets killed and then, you know, just all these random ass other women show up. It seems like they're trying to make you think that the murderer is maybe Giovanni, the weird groundskeeper, because they have one scene where because he's super into porn. He has like all this porn on his wall, like in his little groundkeeper lodge or whatever. And there's one just random ass scene of him cutting out articles about presumably murders. I don't know, they're in Italian. But it looked like they were, and he kind of had them pasted on the wall. But they don't really do much with that. It's like he's always kind of like sneaking around the grounds and like watching women undressing and stuff. But you know, it seems like as red herrings go, he's so obvious that you know it's not him. I will say though, and it's like this came out in 1983, so I'm not too worried about spoiling it, but from pretty much 10 or 15 minutes in, I figured out who the killer was and what was going on. So because they tried so hard to make you believe that the killer was a woman. Like, so for a long time, they're like, oh, well, this Linda person who used to stay in the house, like, here's some of her stuff, like in the cellar. She disappeared. Nobody knows where she is. And then they kind of set up some other ones too. Like, they're like, maybe like Bruno's girlfriend, who is an actress, like, she's up to some shady shit. Like, she's supposed to be out of town. She's supposed to be in Naples, like, being in this play. And then she kind of like blew it off, but she didn't tell him. She told Bruno that, oh, the show was canceled and all this other kind of shit. So she's not being entirely truthful either. So they're kind of trying to set up, like, maybe it's her. They have a scene where they try to set up that maybe it's Sandra, who's directing the horror film, kind of at the center of this. So there's all these little, like, attempts to set things up. But they're very obviously attempts to set people up as the murderer, and so you know that it's not them, you know. And also, I found that since they were trying so hard to make you believe that the killer was a woman, it's like they very specifically showed, you know, women's shoes and like this kind of, you know, like a lacy blouse, you know, with a lacy sleeve or whatever. And I was like, the killer is going to be a man in drag. I mean, that's obviously what it's going to be. And gotta say, I called it. So it's very much like Psycho in that way. And I was like, well, it's obviously not Giovanni, the groundskeeper, because he's too obvious. He's like the porny peeper guy. So it's like, that's not gonna be him. So the only other guy, other than Bruno, and obviously it couldn't be him, was Tony. Now, Tony, You knew it was him, one, because he's only like in a scene or two at the beginning. He was like the guy, I think that he owned the villa, but he was renting it out because I guess he couldn't like afford to pay for it or whatever. He made some kind of crack about that. So he had been renting it out, and he was the one that told Bruno about, yeah, Linda was the girl that used to live here and blah, blah, blah. And like, there was all this kind of stuff, you know, there was all this kind of stuff about Katya, her friend, and like, she had this diary said, oh, Linda's got this terrible secret, and I found out about it, and yada, yada. So you have the same thing where, you know, just like a regular giallo, you're kind of like, you have this person, you know, who's a musician, and he's kind of thrust into the middle of this murder mystery and has to figure out what the hell's going on while people around him are getting murdered. And there's also an aspect too of he just keeps finding stuff around the house, like, oh, here's a stab mark in the bathroom with what looks like blood in it, and here's like a bloody tissue. So he, you know, and all these girls are like disappearing, which he thinks is odd. So he's like, well, there's got to be some murders going, but he doesn't find any bodies. So it does. So there's actually kind of a good reason for him not to go to the police because he's like, look, I don't have any bodies. All I found is like some bloody tissues. These girls are missing. I'm just assuming that they got murdered because there's some weird shit going on, but I don't know where the bodies are. So I don't want to call the cops because, you know, they'll think I'm nuts if I don't have anything to go on. So there's that kind of whole issue too. So as I said, what ends up happening, you have kind of a psycho situation where you find out at some point that the horror movie that Sandra is making that has that scene with Bob from House by the Cemetery and the other two kids, making Bob go down into the cellar and, you know, taunting him about being a female. And you find out later that Sandra was had based this scene on her friend Linda's childhood. But what she didn't know, and what she found out later on, was that Linda was not Linda, but Linda was Tony. So there's kind of this whole thing where Tony had some kind of issue, and it's like he didn't want to be a girl child. And so when he got older, he had a female alter ego, and he would dress up as a woman and kill women. So, like I said, it's kind of like Psycho in that sense. Fun fact, the killer in this one, Tony, who also played Tony slash Linda, is played by Michele Soavi. Now, Michele Soavi was, he was an actor in a bunch of movies too, but probably more famous as being a director. And he directed Stage Fright, he directed The Sect, The Church, and Cemetery Man, one of my favorite Italian films of all time, which we actually did a retrospective on not too long ago. So yeah, so you get to see him in this one being a murderer and, you know, running around in a really weird, like, Nancy Reagan kind of looking ensemble. It was 1983. What are you gonna do? But yeah, as I said, if you are just getting into giallo movies, I wouldn't recommend starting with this one because it's fine. It's not great. It's kind of a very workmanlike. The cinematography is nice, but you know, the dubbing is atrocious, although it's so atrocious that it almost goes around and becomes funny again. I mean, like some of the scenes where like Bruno is calling his girlfriend a vacant nerd for whatever reason, and then saying something like, is it your satisfaction to bask like a frog in the sun, or something like that. It's just all this really, really weird stuff. And then there's kind of this whole plot point about somebody being scared of listening to tennis balls bouncing in the dark and stuff like that. So it's just this really weird, random shit. And like so much of the. And I mean, I really, really love like the scene near the beginning where Katya, the first girl, like just pops out of this dude's closet and no one's all that alarmed about it. And she doesn't really tell him why she doesn't ever tell him why she was in there. And then she gets killed. And then like it was just very funny to me that they kept calling that bug a cockroach, even though it was obviously a spider. So it was just like really, really funny shit like that. But I will say it's kind of. You know, there's some gore in it. It's not nearly as gory as some of the other ones. Probably the bathroom kill, like I said, is the best one, you know, in the sense of like, you know, being gory and being kind of disturbing and stuff. But the rest of it is pretty tame. As I said, maybe because I read some of the reviews, because this is on Shudder at the moment. Read some of the reviews where some people thought like the ending was a surprise. They didn't expect Tony to be the killer, you know, as their Linda alter ego. But I kind of called that really early in the film, just because they were trying to go out of their way to say, look, the killer's a woman, you know what I mean? And then they had all these other women like turning up at this house randomly. So I was like, I know it's not going to be any of them. I know how this is going to go. I've seen enough Giallo movies to know how this is going to go. And indeed, that is exactly how it went. So it wasn't surprising for me. But again, there is some fun stuff about this. But it's a little slow to start out. It doesn't really get good until probably like the halfway point. The first part of it is fine, but a lot of it is just kind of Bruno wandering around the house, Sandra coming over there, creeping around the house and trying to figure out the mystery and whatnot. But it does have like some cool things to recommend it. You know, you could certainly do a lot worse. I've seen a lot worse ones, but you know, it's not the best one either by a long stretch. This is kind of a very middle of the road giallo, but if you've seen a lot of the other ones, you know, the better known ones in the genre, and you're looking for more of that, or you know, you want to see one that came out a little bit later, like I said, this is directed by Lamberto Bava, son of the much more famous Mario Bava, obviously. And he also co-directed Demons with Dario Argento, which is also a good flick. I'll have to do that one of these days as well, because I just watched that again recently. But yeah, it's certainly worth your time if you're really into Italian horror and you haven't seen it. I would recommend it, but just don't expect too much. It's just kind of it's a very middle of the road kind of giallo movie, but it still has, you know, it's still fun. It still has a few things to recommend it, and it's not a waste of time, you know what I mean? So anyway, that'll do it for this Flickers of Fear, and I will see you on the next one. Bye.